got to be mindful and conscientious with your breath. And specifically with doing yoga, like actually in a yoga class, you know, if you're breathing too hard in a pose, you need to back off. You're not going to get what you think out of it, breathing hard. And I was reminded several times by Allison West that I'm breathing too hard. Like I'm not, you know, squatting 250 like I did in high school or college and, you know, closing off my breath and muscling through it. In yoga, you should not be doing that. You want to have a little bit of where your body's working. You're starting to feel a little shaking, but you're still breathing easy because that allows your nervous system to really start paying attention to what's going on in your body. Welcome to Guys Talking Yoga, a podcast created to help inspire men to consider the practice of yoga and its many benefits through the stories and conversations with other guys. I'm your host, Derek Vanderwalker, and today's conversation is actually one that I had a year ago on my friend Larry Milburn's podcast, Roadie Free Radio, a podcast all about the lifestyles and stories from roadies in the music industry. I thought this was such a great conversation, sharing my story and path somewhat differently. But there's a lot of thoughts here about how to start and maintain a practice that I just thought was perfect for this platform. Anyhow, I know you're going to enjoy it. Thanks for listening.
So why don't we just jump in really quick? You know, you've been podcasting for what, a year and a half now?
Yeah, almost 2 years this spring.
Okay, almost 2 years this spring. Out of your closet. Phase one, as you just said. How's it going? Guys Talking Yoga, how's it going?
You know, it's going great. I think I always knew it was going to be some time before I really got comfortable in figuring out how to do all this stuff. But one of the real, I guess, real blessings that have come out of this is just meeting a lot of great people, a lot of guys who are sort of a similar mindset, who have appreciated what yoga has done for them, who have shared their stories with some ups and some downs. You know, all guys are struggling from something. You know, a lot of us are struggling from the same things.
Yeah.
And it's been really awesome to connect with these guys and talk to them. And some I've become very good friends with. Others, it's just been a super awesome conversation that we put on the podcast. But it's going great. And it's become a very quick passion project outside of my day-to-day. And I'm looking forward to doing more in 23.
Cool, man. Good. Well, you know, keep at it because it... you know, there's always room to learn, and I've already learned a lot listening to your show and already read a book off it, which we're going to get to it down the road here in just a little bit. But I know the feeling, you know, I know the feeling of starting, and my listeners know because I talk about it a lot because I'm so grateful to them for tuning in for the last almost 7 years. And, you know, starting something that's a passion project like this because you just want to, you're so into the community and to what it is we talk about. And people just start listening and then you get to meet them and see them places and it sort of comes to life, right? You come out of your closet or your barn and you realize that there's a world out there that's into it and it opens a lot of doors and it's really cool. So I fully 100% get it. So let's back up just a little bit and we'll jump into the yoga part here for a second. But I know we also share a love of the Grateful Dead and that world and music and things like that. So let's go back to growing up. Tell me real quick where you grew up and how you grew up and were you into music you know, as a kid? Am I completely off here or did you tell me that there was perhaps a musical path that was going to be taken?
No, you know, I don't have a lick of musical talent. I'll just put that right out there. But
fair enough.
But I do love all kinds of music. I was born in New York, but we moved out to Connecticut in the mid-70s. And so mostly I've spent the majority of my life growing up in Connecticut in a town called New Canaan, which is a great place to live. And I feel very lucky to have the lifestyle and the upbringing I had there. And, you know, I've been all around the country living in different parts, Colorado, Oregon, LA for a moment, Boston, and so I'm back in the New York area. So I would say I've always been an athlete, definitely an athlete, somebody who's played lots of sports, hockey and lacrosse specifically, lacrosse at the college level and club level beyond that. And I love music. I have a range of interests. I would say that range of interests is always reinforced going down to Jazz Fest in New Orleans, which I'm doing this spring. Cool. You know, more great bands to see and get introduced to. And yeah, I'm a fan of the Grateful Dead. I'm a fan of lots of other great rock bands from the late 60s and 70s. You know, there's just so much to explore in yoga. and in music.
Yeah. Are you someone, incidentally, who likes to practice with music, or do you like it quiet when you go to a studio? Do you appreciate when a teacher has music on, or do you, again, like a nice quiet space to practice?
That's a great question. That's a really good question. I think it varies. I would say in a yoga studio, I probably need music less because I'm paying attention to the cueing of the instructor and where he or she wants to take the class. When I practice at home, and I rarely use like another online class or app, like sometimes I'll put one on just to have the sound of the instructor there. And I'm just kind of going off on my own thing, just as if it was a class, because I'll start out where they are and then I'll take it in my own place. But when I'm doing my own home practice, you know, a lot of times it's just checking in to see what's going on in my body and what do I need that day. And it could be, literally could be 10 minutes because I got to boogie and get to the subway and get to work. Or it could be an hour. I think for me, I don't need a lot of super revved up music like I did when I was in high school or college at the weight room or getting ready for practice. You know, I don't need... Yeah. Van Halen, or, you know, like, I don't need Metallica getting me going. I need something that allows me to check in. And so I really do enjoy more instrumental stuff. It could be more jam band stuff, could be a little jazz. You know, I really love Dark Star. I think Dark Star is a great length for kind of, you know, starting out slow and seeing where you're at. And then, you know, later in Dark Star, in most versions, it starts to get more upbeat. So it really depends, but I would say if I do music, it's at home, and I usually try to find something that's going to be complementary to where I'm at.
I ask because I love practicing to music. I have students that don't really like music, but I teach to music. But I have taken classes with people that play things. For example, there's another Larry who lives up where I am. Big deadhead, and you know, because he's got the tie-dye on and the tie-dye, you know, handkerchief on and the whole deal, do-rag, and he plays Grateful Dead, which in theory I feel like is kind of cool, but he plays that during class, and it drives me bananas, because as a guitar player, musician, singer, songwriter, and a fan, I'm listening to that, and I get lost and like, oh, what did they just do right there? Oh, yeah, I know this song, and then this song is like an earworm. But I'm supposed to be paying attention to cues, you know, so I find that stuff distracting. I know some students find that distracting. So I try to play things that are, you know, I definitely lean toward more of an Indian Africa-based sort of rhythms, those yep. sorts of things to kind of give it the vibe. But I'll tell you, one of the things that two groups that I'm going to throw out there, I'm going to name drop right now that I love teaching to is Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan. But mm-hmm. he's got two recordings with a gentleman named Gaudi. So they're like deep reggae set to Nusrat, which is amazing. So it's got this sort of, you know, reggae vibe, but a slower pace reggae vibe. And then this band out of California that I do not believe is together anymore. They made two albums, Bright Black Morning Light. Super cool. So those are my go-tos, but I try to stay away from stuff that people will know, you know, practicing yoga to James Taylor or something like that is going to be too distracting for most people. And no Britney Spears, obviously.
I'm with you. And I'm about to say, I will also occasionally listen to some Indian music. I wouldn't say I always have Krishna Das on the dial, but you know, Joe Walsh did a really cool little album. What do you call an album that's only four songs? Is there a special name for that type of album?
That's an EP.
An EP.
Extended play.
So he did an EP. Extended play. He did an EP with some Indian artist, which regretfully I'm blanking on the name because it's been a while since I've thought of this. But it was like four songs, had a total Indian vibe to it. And it's sort of like, you know, that I find is great music to explore a practice with at home. But I agree. I think in the class, it's not everyone's ready for music. A lot of everyone's preferences vary, and it can be very distracting too.
Yeah. All right. So let's hear a bit about your yoga journey. And what really sparked having you on the show was an episode you did with your cousin where you sort of flipped everything around, and instead of you interviewing a guest, your cousin interviewed you because I think you had a lot of feedback through your audience that they wanted to know what Derek's story was and how you got to do this thing and why. And in listening to that, I really felt like, okay, I got to have this guy on. And then that sparked us having several conversations and hitting it off. And now there's swag going back and forth, and it's a whole bromance. And so tell us a little bit about your yoga journey, particularly because you are and you were an athlete. And, you know, I think several injuries later, it sort of led you down this path. And there were a few things that you talked about in there that we're going to touch on. So in a nutshell, give us the yoga journey and how you got there.
So I first got into yoga like over 20 years ago. I was working for a tech company in Cambridge, and one of the guys on the sales team was doing Bikram yoga. And I had probably been in the job for like a month, and some of the sales colleagues were like, hey, we're going to go to yoga after work today. Do you want to go? You know, Tom's girlfriend is teaching up at near BU. It's a Bikram yoga class. And I was like, you know, I'm generally someone who's open to doing new stuff, especially when I like the people I'm around. And so I was like, well, sure. And I didn't know much about yoga. I mean, I really didn't have even some of the stereotypical images and things we think about now. I really had no idea. And so when I asked my friend, I was like, well, yeah, so what do I need to do? And he goes, well, just eat a light lunch and drink a lot of water. And so I'm glad I ate a light lunch, because that 90-minute first Bikram class, I mean, really, you know, knocked me out. It was very hard. I loved it. I loved the heat and the sweat and all that good stuff. And so I got into Bikram. This would have been fall of 2000. And, you know, I sort of did it a couple times a month, and I really enjoyed the heat and the stretch and the sweat. And I did that for a few years. I got to my mid-30s. And I started to realize that Bikram was just way too hot. I mean, I was always somebody who sweat a lot to begin with. I always had horrendous hangovers, you know. So hydrating and staying kind of lucid has always been a challenge with my body. And so when I would have a big sweat at a 5:30 class and drank water after class, the next morning I had headaches because I was so dehydrated from Bikram the day before. And so I kind of got away from it because I thought drinking Gatorade, you know, a jug of Gatorade after yoga class wasn't quite the most productive cycle to be in.
Yeah.
And I got away from it because I also didn't know what other yoga was there. So years later, I started to have some back issues. And it wasn't until I had kind of a combination of injuries, and we don't have to go super deep in them, but I'll say I strained both calf muscles in one in my legs due to stenosis at L5-S1, which I wasn't fully aware of, due to a medical condition called spondylolisthesis, where you have a vertebral body is somewhat shifted. And so there was stenosis in that location. So I yanked both nerve lines, which kind of blew out my calves and my feet, meaning they were just in absolute pain. And then a couple of days later, my hip was getting tight, and it was a muscle called the TFL, which is sort of where the you know, the IT band comes in and attaches to in the hip. And again, I didn't know any of these things back then.
Yep.
I should have just grabbed a tennis ball or a foam roller and just massaged that thing. But since my calves were so blown out, I didn't know much else to do other than a stretch that had worked great for me before, but only when I had warmed up. So I did this stretch, which it's a hip flexor stretch. Again, we don't need to go into exactly how it was all done, but it was sort of in my living room. And ultimately, I yanked a muscle that was not ready to be yanked, called the psoas. And the psoas is not a very well-known muscle in the body. It's a massive muscle. It crosses major intersections of joints. So it's a major highway for connecting not only the top half to the bottom half of your body, but you know, your the top of your leg bone into your pelvis, into your lower mid-back, and it affects your diaphragm. It really just gums up everything. So long story short, I had calf injuries, and now I had totally yanked my back, and these were all in a matter of days. And So my body just became a total hot mess of inflammation and spasms. Just everything was just absolutely just a mess. And I think for me, it was a sense of absolute shock. Like, I can't believe, like, what the hell did I just do to my body? Because everything just felt like total pain. And it wasn't like having a nerve disc hit a you know, like a bulging disc on a nerve line. That's no fun. But this was more of like the entire, you know, machine had been taken offline. And it was just hard to untangle. And the analogy that I use is that it's like untangling a fishing line in a canoe, or like you go to go fishing or you go fly fishing and like you're ready to roll. You got the gear, you got the lunch pail, you got the beer next to you. and you just screw up your line and it's a mess. And next thing you know, you're basically, you're not fishing, you're untangling a line. And the more frustrated you are, the worse it gets. So that's where I started to realize I was in a tough place.
And you weren't practicing at that point, right? You were just doing, you had done the Bikram thing. Now, a while later, you get injured. So you're not really practicing yoga. You're just limping along, probably literally and figuratively, from what I understand, trying to get help, trying to get some medical professional person to give you some guidance in this, which it sounded like they didn't from listening to that episode. And you're trying to figure it out yourself, yeah?
Absolutely. I had stopped doing yoga a time before that. Like, I kind of gotten away from it. And at this point now, since everything was sort of deep, so deep in my body, it wasn't something easy for a doctor to diagnose. And by the way, it took me years later to realize it was stenosis in the calves. It took me years later to realize it was the psoas. The first diagnosis with the calves, the doctor did lay it out and explain it. The psoas thing was my own discovery of learning how everything was connected. But yeah, I mean, I was immediately looking outside my body and my world and my sense of self to go to external sources to kind of like, you know, figure this out for me. And that was massage therapists, that was physical therapists, that was, you know, doctors. And it's friggin' exhausting. And it's absolutely exhausting. And I think you not only spend a lot of money running around doing that, but you're also kind of looking, you're looking to everyone else to help solve it and help you give answers. And it's a tough place to be in. It's a really tough place to be in. I know others have been in that spot.
Yeah. And I think that's what resonated for me, you know, in the last 4 years. I think I shared this with you. I've had an ankle surgery, a toe surgery, two Mohs surgeries on my head to remove some skin cancer. I got AFib. I mean, there's, you know, I got arthritis in my hip. Like, there's a lot of things going on, but I didn't know that that was arthritis in my hip. So I kept going to get massaged to get that worked out, right? And first, I didn't know what was going on in my toe. And I think you and I, having had an athletic background, and I don't think you need to necessarily have an athletic background to have this mindset. I think just being guys, what do you do when you hurt? You don't fucking tell anybody. And you just try to tough through it because you're like, I can't stop. I got to keep going, right? And in the case of my listeners, you got a show to do. There's cases that have to come off a truck or a van or a trailer, and things need to be set up, and you got to keep going. And so, like you said, you go external when you can to try to get some help. And I think that's probably where it's probably not helping necessarily, because you're not really slowing down enough to think about and internalize the issue to a degree, I think, right? To find the right help.
Yeah, it's a struggle because I think some people have a time and the resources to step away from what they do. And if your job is, you know, physically demanding, like, you know, whether it's construction or whether or not, you know, you're loading gear on a truck with a band, or you just got to, you're in sales and you're constantly on the road, it's hard to give your body a break to kind of recover from the injury or whatever, whether it's chronic or acute, you know. So everyone's resources do vary. However, I think the mindset around injuries is important. I think there's, you know, there's injuries that, by the way, are like, you know, injuries that happened 20 years ago. And now those ghosts are finally coming to haunt us because, yeah, you wrecked your shoulder, your knee when you were in college, you fell down the fraternity stairs, or you ripped it on the turf, or like, you know, whatever it was.
Yeah.
And now all of a sudden that is starting to come back, and it comes back as arthritis, or it comes back in some other form, right? But then there's the injuries that just happen in the course of living in life, even at midlife and beyond. And it is harder to recover from those, but you can recover. And I think, or you can get it to a place where you are better in control and managing the discomfort and pain. And a couple of thoughts, you know, struck me. Number one is it helps to have a curious mindset of understanding what is the pain, you know, what's causing the pain, and also a little bit about, you know, the place that's injured, kind of like what's involved, right? So, but understanding the pain, listen, a lot of pain just comes from the amount of stress and tension. You know, I think if you ever read John Sarnow's book on healing back pain, I think he really gets into the thrust of it. You know, like type A people, you know, have a lot of just constant tension, and that does manifest in pain. And that pain can be, you know, in different parts of the body, or it can be in a specific location. So I think understanding the mind and dealing with stress and anxiety is one thing. The second thing is also understanding whether your pain is due to some mechanics, some aspects of how you're living your day, how you're moving your body. And, you know, some of the pain discomfort is just we deal with arthritis and just kind of deteriorating parts of our body. But to get to the curiosity part and thinking about what's what, you know, the ankle is a very complicated part of the body. You know, it takes a minute to recover and learn how to strengthen the foot and the calves and move your balance around your foot. And if you've had plantar fasciitis or you've had turf toe and different things,
worst.
Or you've got bunions
the
or whatever
worst.
It is, whatever glorious thing you have, you know, the foot is really complicated. And the foot's something to it's important to try to see it as a journey of figuring out the mechanics of your foot. Same with the knee and the hip and the back and the shoulder. So I think you just got to embrace the fact that this is a teachable moment when you have these injuries and know that if you see it as a practice, if you see it not as the results of saying, I'm going to have my foot exactly the way it was before the injury, but you see it more as a journey, as a practice of trying to like knit together and restore and strengthen that spot, then that can be a really good mindset. And the last thing I'll say is that there's a quote by Hemingway. I can't remember if it's in For Whom the Bell Tolls or Farewell to Arms, but more or less the quote is, you know, many of us are broken and some of us are strongest in the broken places. And that can be a sort of a literal or a figurative interpretation about trauma and pain and suffering. And I think it's an opportunity too. And as you just get older, you have to see the body. The body does change over time, but you have to see the body more as a living cell in an organism that evolves and can still heal and not as a machine that's totally wearing down.
Right. And not as a machine that can just keep going because it's a machine. Right?
Totally. Right?
You know, I think we spend the first 20, 35, maybe 40 years of our lives just plowing ahead, thinking that this thing,
right,
is indestructible. No matter who tells you as you're growing up or how many times you hear it, like, oh, you don't want to drink too much tonight. You know, you take care of yourself now because it'll come back. You know, I hit 47, 48, dude, and the machine started talking to me really loudly, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And I know that happens for a lot of guys. And it's what's ironic and frustrating and liberating and validating is like you hear that. Oh, just wait till you get into your late 40s. Wait till you get to your 50s. You know?
I have a younger sister who's 8 years younger than me. And I remember when I was like 35 or 36, she was in her late 20s. And she was always rolling her eyes when I told her, like, just like, how hard the hangover was or how hard it was to go out, you know, keep up with some of her crowd.
Yeah.
Because I would go out with them sometimes and she was just like, she'd roll her eyes. And I said, listen, I'm going to write you a note that you can't open until you're 36. But, you know, basically I know it's going to be like, how do you feel now? And she literally said, she's older than 36 now, but she said to me a couple of years ago, she's like, I kind of get where you're coming from. She's like, it does. And I think as you get older, I think the 30s and going into your 40s is the toughest time of letting go of some of those old habits and choices. You know, they don't have to be the worst habit, but just general, just learning to kind of like let those things go.
Yeah.
I think as you get closer into 50, you can be in a great place by just learning to really like make the right choices and play the long game.
You said something in that episode. You said several things in that episode that resonated, right? Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. But you said several things. One of those, which I'll get to in a second, resonated with me because, you know, I think I told you in my yoga journey, when I first discovered yoga in 94, 95 in Los Angeles, I wandered into a studio. I was 22-ish, something like that. Had been a football player and skier and swimmer and all this stuff, athlete. But things always hurt. I got flat feet. My back always hurt. And I walk in this yoga studio and these two women are chatting. And I said, you know, I just started talking to them. Like what goes on in this mystical place you have here? And, you know, shared some of my physical ailments with them. And I said, you know, at the end of it, I was like, I just want to get out of my fucking body sometimes. Like, I just got to get out of it. And the woman who ended up being the owner looked at me and she was like, no, you've got to get into your body. Right. And I was like, what? You know, I'd never, again, weight rooms and those types of scenarios and situations. That was my life. And so being in a yoga studio and going deep, you know, like a pose like pigeon or down dog or, I call those reckoning poses, you know, because they bring forth sort of your life as like as a laundry list. You said that in your episode, I can't remember who the quote is from, but like to go out, you got to go in.
Yeah, it's like Joseph Campbell. Joseph Campbell, who like, you know, was, I mean, for every creative person out there, like they've read The Hero's Journey or The Hero of a Thousand Faces.
Yeah.
And for those who don't know Joseph Campbell, like he was a mythologist and somebody who was super into like originally like Irish and Celtic mythology that went into Greek mythology. Then he started to get into everything and realize the story is always the same. And so anyhow, his quote is, you know, the way out is the way in. That's and, right. You know, you don't have to take a super like Jungian, you know, path on that, which, but that's more or less what he was sort of like suggesting. Mm-hmm. But it really, it's a matter of just like, just listening and feeling your body. And so that's a little bit of like, you know, your external relationship with proprioception, but also the internal interoception, you know, what's that relationship? What do you feel inside you? And I think that's a great skill to cultivate. And that's, mm-hmm. I think it's super critical for as we get older is literally knowing what you feel, because it might just save your life. There was a guy named Mark Velker who I had on about a year ago with the Warriors at Ease series that I did, which was Warriors at Ease is a nonprofit. They've taken yoga and other types of techniques to the military and first responder communities to learn how to use these yoga techniques to ultimately for health and wellness, particularly with post-traumatic stress. And, Mark went through the program. Mark flew Cobra helicopters for 25 years in the Marines. He was a smoke jumper out west as well. I mean, so he's in his well into his 50s. He might even be early 60s now. Mm. And he said because of his yoga practice, he had developed a sense of awareness in his body where one day he just felt something not right in his either his hip or was his shoulder, or I don't know where it was, or his chest. And he knew something was not right. And so he went to the emergency room, and sure enough, it was a blood clot. Wow. And he said, if I hadn't had a yoga practice and I hadn't developed that awareness, cultivated that sense of knowing how I feel or what's going on. And by the way, knowing how you feel is not just like, am I in a crappy mood or I'm pissed off?
Right.
But also really is having this deeper sense of like, you know, you got a really good signal with what's going on inside your body. And so it saved his life. On a smaller note, just knowing how you feel, where you're at in your body, you know, might help you make that choice of like, I don't need another Jack and Coke, or I don't need to, you know, keep on running another 20 minutes because something feels off, or maybe not having this donut at the diner on Sunday or whatever it is.
Yeah. Or that extra slice of pizza at 2 a.m. when you're loading out to bring it full circle.
Which always tastes great.
Yeah, it sure does, man. Yeah. It sure does. Well, I think, you know, the other interesting thing there is like, here's a guy who was a Marine, like he's a Marine, right? Is that what you said? He's a Marine flying helicopters?
Marine, yep.
Yeah. Marine jumping out of helicopters, smoke jumper and all that kind of stuff. Still had a problem, right? Nobody's immune to the shit. Shit that's coming for you. So how did you ultimately get back into yoga and find yoga as a place of solace, you know, and a way to go in for you and to help you?
I had these injuries almost exactly 10 years ago. It was January of 2013. I was living in New York previously. And for about a solid year and a half, 2 years, I was just in and out of PT, physical therapy. Because, you know, because everything was so like jacked up on the inside, I kept having imbalances where I would just like injure my shoulder now because everything is overcompensating. You just start, you know, you start hitting every branch on the tree, you know, falling down, you know, coming to hitting it before you hit the ground. So it's like, eventually I was just like, listen, I just can't be constantly going to this like carousel of massage therapists, you know, PTs, doctors, psychotherapy. I was really in a rut. I was really in a friggin' rut. And I was like, you know, I have to figure out how to unwind my body. Cause I was definitely depressed, no question. But I also knew that like there's something like my body's so jacked up. It is a big reason why I am in this place. And so I had to figure out how to undo that. So for me, it was like, all right, I think yoga is probably the place to figure this out because I need to have some agency, some control of knowing what I'm doing. And it has to be something I can do on my own because I'm going to be broke by the time I'm 60 if I'm spending all this money on all these other professionals. So I slowly got back into it by seeking out an Iyengar instructor because I had moved out to Colorado to change my lifestyle. I just was totally tapped out in New York at that point. Moved to Colorado, found a really good Iyengar instructor. And if nobody knows what Iyengar is, it's named after a man named BKS Iyengar, who, you know, ultimately passed away about 10 years ago. He was in his late 90s, but he is one of the great influences in the Western yoga that we do here in the States, particularly with blocks, bolsters, belts, any type of support they use in class. That all comes from Iyengar. So Iyengar instructors are very good, a great resource to go to when you have a lot of injuries or you have chronic injuries or acute injuries. You know, it's not a flowing class. You know, you're not doing up dog, down dog, and then warrior one, and then down dog. You know, you're using these blocks, bolsters, chairs, ropes, slings, using the walls to support you in a pose so you can work on the alignment. And if you can work on the alignment, you can also work on knitting together, you know, your neuro connection with your body, and you can really work on things and take your time. So that's where I started. That was probably around, you know, spring of 2016. I was kind of doing a little bit of that here and there, building my confidence around Iyengar yoga. You know, I had a lot of weight. I was still dealing with injuries and a lot of reluctance to do stuff. And then in the spring of 2017, I was like, you know, I gotta learn this stuff for myself, because I was going into like these, core power yoga classes, and some instructor was like 24, and you know, like I've got a, you know, spondylolisthesis at L5-S1. I got some stenosis. I got this over here and over there. And she's kind of looking at me like, okay, well, thank you. And, and I was realized like, I'm just going to go in the back. And ultimately I was kind of going, to be honest, I wanted the heated room. Mm-hmm. And I had enough like blocks and supposers. You thought I'd be camping out for dead show tickets, the way I looked in the back of that class. So, you know, I think for me, it was a little bit of realizing that no one's going to solve this for me. And I didn't realize all of the things that yoga would do for me, you know, but I knew I had to figure out a way to do this, doing yoga safely on my own without assuming the instructor is going to mention a pose to the class that I shouldn't be doing, or that I shouldn't be doing without some sort of support or modification. So ultimately, I was like 2017, I was like, I got to get certified. And so I applied to join the 200-hour teacher training program with a woman named Allison West, who I knew before. She was in New York. She had a great yoga studio called Yoga Union. It was in Union Square, and she had a mix of an Iyengar Vinyasa background. She was then in her early 60s. You know, she's now probably close to 70. She is an absolute genius when it comes to, you know, exploring and learning how to use props in the body with yoga. And you can't solve back pain with one quick, easy pose, but you can develop a sense of agency and awareness in your body to slowly work through things that are probably going to help ameliorate some of that pain or discomfort or dysfunction. And so I got into her program in the fall of 2017. It went into early 2018. You know, it was like drinking from a fire hose as far as learning about the asanas and the yoga philosophy and anatomy. But I knew I was on the right track, and I still struggled a lot doing certain poses. Like, I still just had the psoas that was just super tight and just wouldn't let me open my hip. I couldn't do certain things. Anyhow, long story short, I kept on working at it, and over time, slowly things became to open up. I discovered I had a torn labrum in the hip because that psoas was pulling so hard on the top of the femur, the leg bone, that it had jammed it into the hip socket. So now all of a sudden I had this unfound pain that was probably like totally buried because things were so jammed up. But I was getting mobility and I was developing some awareness. And so ultimately in early 2020, I did a 300-hour teacher training with a guy named Jason Crandall. And that was like a 2-week session. The first third was like the 2-week session in San Francisco. And then COVID hit. So the rest of the program for me and for others were all done online because of COVID. But along the way, I just kept learning about anatomy and understanding how I felt in my body, working through certain things that were awkward, learning how to back off, learning how to use props, learning how to just slowly let my own nervous system kind of figure things out. And I'll tell you, it takes time. It takes a lot of time. And I think, again, if you can pay attention to how you feel And if you learn about anatomy, and there's a lot of great anatomy books out there, you're just learning what muscle is what and how it works through these other muscles. And I think a lot of people can really get themselves in a great place by committing to a steady yoga practice and learning more about yoga and learning more about their body.
And to be fair, you don't have to take the 200-hour, 300-hour. You don't have to take a teacher training because you want to be a teacher. Like, it's not just there to learn how to teach yoga. And you also don't have to do that. You don't have to rack up 800 hours and the money, quite frankly, and the time, because those things are big commitments, right?
Yes.
In order to develop a yoga practice for the sole purpose of trying to help yourself physically and, of course, mentally and emotionally and whatnot. But it certainly can help if you can, or even if, like you said, you just were like, I got to learn more about what's going on in my body anatomically, so maybe I'll find an anatomy class, or I think it's called The Science of Yoga, and it's awesome picture book.
The anatomy of Yoga.
I think it's the anatomy of, but I also feel like the word science is in there somewhere. Okay. And, you know, it's someone doing a pose. It's like a figure, not necessarily an actual person doing the pose, and you see all the muscles that are not only being activated, but the ones are passive. But then the muscles and the joints, how things fit, and I'm just learning about like. Oh, well, that pose seems to be targeting the area of my body that hurts. So you get to know the names around those things so that when you do go in to see a doctor or you see a chiropractor, whoever, you can speak a little bit more, you know, have a bit more of an informed mind and conversation with them. So, but taking a 200-hour yoga training, if you can do it, will give you a phenomenal understanding just of the body. Right. Even if you did nothing as a teacher, which you didn't go into it wanting to be a teacher.
Yeah. A lot of people go into yoga teacher training just for like the personal enrichment, like learning about yoga and their body. It is definitely a time commitment. It also can be quite pricey to commit to that. A lot of yoga studios will do certain workshops around the shoulder, around back issues. I know Allison West has some exceptional workshops that she does at various studios around the country. And so other studios do have sort of workshops you can do without totally going into an immersive program. But I really think the basic thing is, and I would imagine you totally agree too, which is like, you just have to develop a little bit of a practice. You know, like one reason why I never was a good musician was I never really had the commitment of like practicing to learn how to play the guitar. And so you got to keep doing a little bit along the way. And there's a lot of great incentive to starting a little bit of a practice. And maybe it's just going on Saturdays, or maybe it's just doing even twice a month. That's fine. Start somewhere. But ultimately, you want to get to a place where you are not dragging yourself to a studio. You're psyched to go to that class. And you're also psyched to roll out that mat in your own living room and do what you need to do, because your body's saying, we need to move around a little bit, or we need to take a break. And I think just having some kind of practice and commitment is good enough. And having a good anatomy book, like, you know, The Anatomy of Yoga, which I think is the book you're talking about with Leslie Kaminoff and Amy Matthews. Mm-hmm. There's a really good book that's a common book in a lot of yoga classes and anatomy classes. It's called The Anatomy of Movement. And it's written by a French author named Blandine Calais-Germain. And we can stick it in the show notes, Larry. Yep. But this is a book that has great pictures, but also explains, you know, for the moving of the shoulder, the scapula into, you know, protraction, what are the muscles that are doing that? And I think that even goes a little deeper into helping you understand this stuff. So again, you don't have to commit to a whole program, but start a little practice, make a commitment, pay attention to how you're evolving, and learn a little bit about anatomy.
So, okay, start a little practice. Where the hell does somebody start with yoga?
Yeah, I think the best thing you can do is go support a local yoga studio. A lot of them were hit hard during the pandemic. Many of them haven't come back. I think we need to have yoga studios. And if you're in a place like New York, you can just literally there's a yoga studio probably, you know, a 5 or 10 minute, 20 minute walk away. In other towns, you probably have to drive a little bit. I think it's worth it. I think it's good for you as a new student. I think it's good for the studio and the community. I think it's good to meet other people in these classes. You don't have to become best friends, but like, get out of your living room, go get in a class, because there's nothing like being in the studio. There's nothing like seeing live music. You know, I rarely ever watch shows on Nugs, you know, on Nugs, because there's just nothing like being at the Capitol Theater, or like being in some great place in New York, or being at a jazz fest in New Orleans, or wherever it is. Like, there's something you feel in the room doing yoga with other people. I also think it's very gratifying to know that like everyone's got other challenges and struggles. You know, it's not like we're all doing headstands. It's not like we're all, you know, these super limber bodies.
Yeah.
But you need to support that studio. And I also think you'll be able to get more out of it on your own. It's good to get away from your house, you know, just like our work life. Sometimes it's good to get away from, you know, constantly working from home. So that's number one. Number two is buy a good yoga mat. Like, buy a yoga mat. Don't steal your spouse's yoga mat or borrow friends. Like, commit to a good yoga mat. Jade yoga mats are great yoga mats to start with, particularly the Harmony mat.
That's what I use.
It's got good grip.
Yep.
It's good grip. I mostly use the Jade Harmony mat. I have some Mandukas, but the Jade yoga mat is, it's easy to clean. You know, it's, you can throw it into most sort of washing machines that you throw it in the side. Don't throw it in the ones from the top, because those are older machines and may not be great, but you can throw it into a machine on those side loaders. Just put it on hot. You don't even use any soap. Give it a rinse, dry it out. And they're good grippy mats, and they're light enough to take to different classes or throw in a bag. The other thing is that there's a great Jade travel mat that's super thin. It's almost like they took the skin off the Harmony and they just gave you the skin of the Harmony, the grippy side.
Yep.
If you're traveling a lot, you pack that in a bag. It folds up like the size of, you know, like, have you ever read the book called The Power Broker? You know, it's about the famous New York, blanket on, his name, but, the Parks guy. Anyhow, The Power Broker is 1,000-page paperback. It's massive. But if you fold up this yoga mat, it's effectively the size of that little paperback book. Mm. So you can take that mat to with you on the road. And as long as you got a carpet or some sort of rug to roll it out on, you know, you can easily do a little something on the road. So again, buy a yoga mat, buy a foam yoga block, probably two. Mm-hmm. You should buy a belt, and you'll learn how to use these things more going to certain alignment-based yoga classes at certain studios. And, but also on the road, if you have just one yoga block, it's great to put under your sacrum. If you're lying on your back to give your lower back and hips a rest, you know, you just stick it under your sacrum, to sort of just breathe into that. It's good for bad knees. It's good for, like, you know, putting a hand down in a warrior, you know, in a sort of side angle pose. There's just lots of things you can do with a foam yoga block. You don't need a wooden one. You don't need a cork one, but a foam yoga block is great. You can get the regular size. You can get a thin one. So that's what I would say: a mat, a yoga block, and a belt, and maybe, you know, maybe a blanket if you're something you're using at a studio. But how and when you use these comes with the practice. You just learn a little bit of, like, oh, I need some support here, mm-hmm. or I'm going to use this. But they're not big commitments in your bag. You know, a rug is probably a lot to take with you, but a little yoga mat, a block, and a belt, a yoga belt, you can do that.
I think that's great, because, you know, most folks on the road are traveling with a Pelican case of some size and, you know, and a bag, knapsack, something like that, duffel bag, and you can definitely get those items right in there. They don't take up a lot of room. I think going back for a second to talk about where to start, also ask your friends, right? Do you practice yoga? Where do you practice yoga? What studio do you recommend? What teacher there might you recommend, right? Like, ask people. Don't just go at it blindly, because that friend may have similar issues that you have, and they'll be able to guide you pretty well to find someone. And I think it's great to, I would much rather practice in person at a studio. And I obviously, supporting studios is a big thing, and you get so much more out of it. If you had to practice online, is there anybody you would recommend for the listeners here to check out?
Yeah, I would say there's a lot of good stuff on YouTube. And, you know, there really is. I think Yoga with Adrienne is sort of the most popular free ad-supported yoga on YouTube. I think she's been doing it for like at least 10 years. So yeah. There's tons up there. There's a guy named, blank, can't remember his name, but he has a yoga brand called Manflow Yoga. He has some good stuff on YouTube. Some of it's free. Some of it you have to go to a site for subscriptions. I think Peloton classes seem to be just, you know, there's some good ones in there as well. I think there's a a yoga subscription platform called Glow that they have some good classes in there as well. It's GLO. You know, there's definitely some that are out there, but don't assume that there aren't good ones on YouTube that are free. It might take you a little time to go find one. I would look for something that says, you know, beginner sun salutations. Just start with that. You know, that's a very super basic series of movements to work on and play through. And if you've got shoulder issues, you don't have to do press up and, you know, up dog or do cobra pose or, you know, any of these sort of planks. Like, just, you know your body, just like you can ease off that stuff. But I think getting into some of that stuff and just getting into routine is a great place to start.
So in terms of, in fact, before I get to this next question, where would you start? Like, what class would you start with? There's so many different styles of yoga, Derek. There's like, I know, there's vinyasa, there's yoga. Like, what would you start with?
I would say, first of all, I'd go to your local yoga studio and I would say, I'd like to have a private with one of the instructors. And maybe if your friend or somebody knows that studio or knows a particular instructor who's really good, just ask for that instructor and say, I'd like to work on do a private with you. And like, you know, I don't know, maybe it's like $75 to $100, you know, it probably depends on the market, but that's worth it because you, number one, get to establish a relationship with that instructor. So when he or she sees you in class, they know a little bit about who you are and why you're doing it or what challenges you might have. But also he or she can also evaluate kind of where you're struggling with a simple sun salutation series. Or if you've got, you know, you've got some injuries you want to talk about, like that you don't wouldn't want to share in a, you know, in a big class as the new guy or gal in the class, you know, so sign them up for a private, you know, maybe one, two or three, you know, I think they're going to understand that not everyone can afford doing regular privates, but it's a great way to get to know that person. And it's a great way for you to kind of get kind of a warm ramp up to that studio. But for classes, I would say a slow flow vinyasa class is good. I think most of the yoga classes these days seem to be more of a faster paced vinyasa style, which I think you miss out a lot on, even as an experienced practitioner. Like just when you get into the pose, you should be hanging there like for a minute and like breathing into that. And how do you feel? What's going on with your feet, your hips, your mind? You know, most of these classes are more cardio driven. So again, look for a slow flow vinyasa class. Also look for an alignment class. You know, that's a great place to learn about alignment. And also sometimes they have a beginner series or a beginner class or a beginner workshop. Don't be afraid to do a beginner thing because they'll know that you are not coming with an extensive practice, and you'll know that others in the room are trying to explore yoga. And just be patient. Just be patient with yourself. Be patient with the results that you may or may not be seeing right away. But a lot of these yoga classes want to bring in new members to their community, like for the right reasons. Like they're running a business, but they also want to build the community. They want people coming in. They believe in yoga. Nobody does yoga to make a lot of money. You know, people do yoga because they see the value and they see the beauty in kind of sharing that and helping people enter that door.
I have we're in February. So it's now I've been teaching for 2 years. I've got a guy in my Friday night restorative yoga class. He's 63 years old. He's been a car mechanic for 30 plus years and he's tall. He's probably 6'5", I think. And his lift in his garage is about 2 inches too short for him. So he has spent 30, 35 years bent over to one side working on a car. Anyway, his wife was coming to my restorative class. And for Valentine's Day a year and a half ago or something, or his birthday, she got him a couple of privates with me. And then he started coming to class. This dude comes every Friday night. But I know that having that hour with him to find out what was going on with his body and what was going on with him, why he wanted to be there, you know, privately helped him get the courage up to come into class. And this dude comes every Friday night and he loves it. And so I think that's a great, great place to start. With a couple of privates, and you don't have to do a fucking hour and a half. You can go an hour, right? You can go 30 minutes just to feel it out. And that'll be cheaper. To bounce back to yoga with Adrienne, she's actually the one that I always help people to go check out because it's not an hour and a half or an hour power yoga, right? It's like they're 20, 30 minute tops, little hits. And she keeps enough of the frou-frou in to give it that vibe, but it's not super frou-frou. And it's very accessible, and it's a nice comfortable pace. And I do her sometimes when I have a chance to practice at home. So I think that's awesome. And then, you know, the yoga basics thing, like you said, if you can find that, I think that's tremendous, because you got to learn some of the basics. I think one of the things that happens, and I'm sure you can attest to this, right, is you get somebody who's gung ho or type A, whatever. I want to work out. I'm going to go to that power class or that Bikram class. And they get in there and they haven't learned some of the fundamentals of proper alignment. And lo and behold, sometime later, they get hurt. And then it's yoga's fault.
Yeah.
And then they blame it on that. It's like trying veganism, and you just eat a lot of carbs because you don't know the right things to eat. And then you gain a lot of weight, and you're like, yeah, I went vegan and I gained a lot of weight. Fuck that. And so I see so many people come in, for example, and do a poor transition into up dog from, like, say, like chaturanga or low plank. And, you know, they're on their toes and they're wrenching their back, and they haven't gotten their shoulder properly aligned, you know, with their wrist or before their wrist, whatever it is. And you just see the small of their back every time, you know, get crunched, and it drives me bananas. And I usually stop the class and, like, remind people, you know, to be wary of that. And you get that stuff in a basics class. You learn how to properly do these things in a basics class. So I think that's a great idea. Derek, what do you say to somebody who says, but dude, I'm on the road, man. I'm so fucking tired because I had that extra piece of pizza and that extra beer the night before. We roll into a gig. I got to, you know, I'm on the truck or on the bus. There's nowhere to do it. What am I going to do? There's no time. I can't take time for this. Yoga seems like this big, unapproachable thing, and I need all this time. What do I do if I'm an on the road guy?
Well, in everyone's lives, it gets tough to sometimes stick to a routine, or definitely tough to start a new routine. And I would say you're always going to feel better if you do a little bit of yoga than no yoga. And somebody once asked this woman, Judith Lassiter, who was one of the early yoga people in the 70s, she started Yoga Journal, and somebody asked her, like, you know, when should you do yoga? And she was like, what days should you do yoga on? She's like, only on the days you want to feel good. And so remind yourself, if you're busy, like, this is your moment to check out. And it doesn't have to be 90 minutes with Christian Dai or, like, a candle in the background and, like, you know, a lighted room. You just got to get a mat and you got to roll it out. You need about probably, you know, enough space for your arms to spread out like you were in a snow angel, enough space head to toes that you can, you know, put your feet in front of you and raise your arms behind you as you're lying on the ground. You need some space, and you just lie down. If you're hungover, just lie down. You should take the little yoga block or something foamy or something good and put it under the base of your sacrum, and then just breathe in. And you're going to know that whether or not you want to keep exploring, and you probably will. And if you've got to be somewhere in 20 minutes, give yourself 5 or 10. Like, even if you just lie there and breathe, and maybe you play a little bit with your feet on the mat, and you're just exploring a little, twisting your body. It's literally a place to check in and start committing to being aware how you feel, breathing into some of these tense spots. And if that feels pretty good lying on your back, you know, maybe you're doing some, you know, little knees to your chest. You're just kind of, you're grabbing your knee, your chest, right? And that feels good. Then just flip over on your belly and get on all fours like you're, you know, about to do a cat cow. Maybe do a little cat cow, you know, maybe do a little twisting. Maybe it becomes a down dog. Maybe that becomes a little bit more of like an up dog and a down dog. And so the idea is make the commitment to take a minute to see how you feel and check in. And pretty soon you're probably going to start moving a little more. Like, you might find that you only were going to give yourself 10 minutes. And when that 10 minutes is up, you're like, shit, I could do this for 12. I could do this another 4 or 5 minutes. And, or pick a song that's 10 minutes or 8 minutes or nine, or build a little playlist of 2 or 3 songs that give you about a 15 or 20 minute, like, little session and practice. And, you know, also I'd work on, you know, you could do a little bit of a stand up, just do a little squat, some easy squats, just get the knees and the back warmed up before you start doing stuff. Maybe you do a, like a, what's the, like a wall sit. You just lie, mm-hmm. sit against the wall, get your quads warmed up. And maybe you do a little protraction of your shoulder blades, like you're pushing up into a plank. Maybe you're doing a little retraction as well. Maybe you're doing that against a wall. Maybe you're doing a push-up against a wall. Like, there's just, it doesn't have to be full-blown, like, official yoga. It's just checking in with your breath and your body and seeing what you feel.
I tell people a half sun salutation, just forward fold, you know?
Love it.
In fact, I do that a lot, you know, to warm up a class, particularly my older folks, just to get the spine moving and to automatically snap their brain and their breath back with the movement, you know, make that connection yep. for them. So yeah, it doesn't need a lot of space. It doesn't need a lot of time. And just sitting quietly and breathing is yoga, right? I mean, I, again, 100%. Too, I think you will, you know this, I think you'll agree. You're not supposed to go into this to see how long you can hold a headstand or how long your down dog is or whatever, right? The point of yoga is to basically quiet the mind so that you can commune with the universe. That's, and the posers are there to move the energy out and cleanse your energy out and clear space so that you can then sit quietly to do this stuff. But so that's the ultimate goal. So bringing it to that, let's talk a little bit about breath and let's talk about Eddie Stern's book, One Simple Thing.
So you're right. First of all, sitting quietly and breathing is yoga. You don't have to be in the lotus position. You could be lying down. You could be in your favorite, you know, recliner. I think just having the iPhone, you know, the smartphone away from you, the laptop away, everything quiet, just breathing. You even do yoga on the tarmac, wondering why hasn't this flight, you know, left yet. And so just breathing is yoga. The great thing is about, you know, breath work, obviously we need to keep breathing. You know, as Jon Kabat-Zinn says, as long as you're breathing, there's still right with you than wrong with you. If you're not breathing, there's not much we can do with you, you know? So breathing itself calms the nervous system, or it can excite the nervous system. If you have a longer inhalation, you're going to trick the body into thinking it's not getting enough air and it's going to increase the heart rate. If you have a longer exhalation, like trying to get to sleep at night after a full day, if you lengthen, do a shorter inhale and a longer exhale, you're going to calm the nervous system. You're going to calm it by changing the pressure in your heart. So also anytime you're stressed out, breath work. So that's one part of it. The other part of it is also like when you breathe, your body's pulling all of the waste out of your, you know, parts of your body. Your lymphatic system is pulling that into your bloodstream, into your gut, and you're excreting that out. So when you're breathing, you're also like keeping the air moving in your body and bringing all good nutrients back to those places where you remove that stuff. Breath work is also going to bring heat into your body. It's going to bring awareness. If you've got tightness in your body, if you've got a, you know, something tight in your foot or in your hip or your back, you know, check out your posture, whether you're sitting or lying down or standing, and take a breath. And so breathing is so critical for checking in, for calming, for getting focused. It really is the place where you start. Also, in some ways, the breath is a place to kind of move in and out of your material relationship to more of your existential relationship, which is sort of a deeper thinking about the breath and consciousness and that sort of thing. But in general, just to keep homeostasis and the machine running or the organism flowing, you got to be mindful and conscientious with your breath. And specifically with doing yoga, like actually in a yoga class, you know, if you're breathing too hard in a pose, you need to back off. You're not going to get what you think out of it, breathing hard. Mm-hmm. And I was reminded several times by Allison West that I'm breathing too hard. Like I'm not, you know, squatting 250 like I did in high school or college and, you know, closing off my breath and muscling through it. Mm-hmm. In yoga, you should not be doing that. You want to have a little bit of where your body's working. You're starting to feel a little shaking, but you're still breathing easy because that allows your nervous system to really start paying attention to what's going on in your body. So the breath is just, there's so many places to go explore with the breath. And I'm still learning every day about the various different yogic techniques for doing breath work, the bandhas and learning how to hold breath in certain places. But in general, you should be easy breath when you're doing your asanas and poses.
Eddie Stern's book, One Simple Thing. just give us a brief synopsis on that. I'm going to let you take that one.
Yeah, so I think it's a great book. I became aware of Eddie Stern when I was doing teacher training with Allison West. Eddie Stern was a name that was sort of like in the yoga world, a well-known name. He's been doing yoga since, you know, the late 80s. He was a punker in New York. He, you know, he loved record shops and punk music. And he got into yoga in the late 80s in India. Anyhow, he wrote a book in 2019 called One Simple Thing, A New Look at the Science of Yoga and How It Can Transform Your Life. And what I really appreciate about the book is it's accessible. It matches a little bit of the Eastern and Western kind of science around wellness and health. It is very comprehensive, and it's something you can reread and come back to. I mean, I've got, you know, notes and marks on things that resonated with me with the first time I read it, and I was just rereading it the other day, and other things popped out. It's like reading, you know, a book you read in high school English, you know, like you read The Great Gatsby again or Catcher in the Rye or whatever the book you read in high school, you read again as an older person with more experience, you know, there's just things you see differently. And I think with this particular book, there's so much in there. It's so dense, that dense with interesting aspects about a broad understanding of yoga, that you can keep coming back to it and keep exploring as your practice grows. A lot more of this stuff is going to make sense. So I just highly recommend it as a great introduction book to yoga. It's not too woo-woo mystical, and it's not so dense with requiring deep context of yoga, yoga history. And I think it's just a great pickup.
This has been a pleasure, dude. And I appreciate you taking the time to do this. And I can't wait for us to hook up in person one day.
Thanks for having me on. So that was one of my favorite conversations. Hey, Larry, thanks again for having me on your podcast and also sharing this conversation here on Guys Talking Yoga. And thanks to all of you for listening and supporting along the way. If you haven't done so already, make sure you follow us on Instagram at GTY Podcast and also subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.